Good evening, everyone. Tonight's talk is called You Are the Universe. In the mid-70s, the CIA managed to infiltrate a top-secret Russian military installation. Their agent, a man called Pat Price, was very successful. He was able to give detailed drawings of the structure of the site and information concerning the nature of the secret tasks being performed within. Much to their delight, Price was also able to access locked filing cabinets and to read the content of top secret reports. However, the truly significant nature of this story is that the secret agent never went to Russia. Pat Price did all this just sitting quietly in a house somewhere in the USA. How? He was said to be a psychic who had the unique ability to see anything, anywhere in the world, just by being given a map reference. In the scientific world, this ability is now known as remote viewing. The CIA's interest in Price's abilities stemmed from the findings of a series of vigorous scientific experiments in which he had taken part. The results suggested that his powers were real. Science is generally sceptical of all things paranormal, largely owing to the fact that objective analysis in such a subjective area is nigh on impossible. However, in recent times, with advances in technology and research techniques, a growing body of scientific evidence has been gathered which demonstrate how a phenomenon like remote viewing might be possible. Most famously, pioneers in quantum physics made the bizarre discovery that at the subatomic level, particles of matter cannot really be said to exist in any one form. Rather, they exist as a flux with the potential to be many possible things all at the same time and are connected everywhere all at once. It also became apparent that these particles have no meaning in isolation, but only in relationship to everything else. The scientists concluded that at the most elementary level, matter is completely indivisible, and they began to view the universe as a dynamic web of interconnection. Further studies led physicists to theorize that the most fundamental nature of matter was, in fact, a vast ocean of subatomic vibrations, which they called the zero-point field, and that everything, including human beings, were made of this same basic material. The field acts as a kind of information exchange. If someone like Pat Price had the capacity to mentally tap into it, there's no reason why he couldn't connect with things outside of his immediate sensory range. This new knowledge had attached to it many profound implications about the nature of reality, and scientists began to speculate. Could the zero-point field explain some of the fundamental mysteries of life? How life begins? How a single cell turns into a fully formed person? Could it explain how flocks of birds or shoals of fish coordinate so effortlessly? Could the field be manipulated? Might it lead the way to the true space age? Many of the facts that came from this research seem to have more in common with religious, philosophical, and mystic belief, the most notable of which, from the Buddhist perspective, is the notion that in this underlying energy field, there is no room for the duality of me and not me. It seems that nearly all religious or mystical traditions have some concept of an underlying and unifying structure to existence. For instance, the shamans of Central and South America saw everything in the universe as an infinite flow of energy. With sufficient training, the energy could be consciously manipulated and used to advantage. This concept is also prevalent in modern alternative therapies like Reiki, where the universal life energy is channeled via the therapist to specific areas of a patient's body. The ancient Hindus used the analogy of Indra's net to convey the idea of interconnection. The net is infinite, with jewels placed in each knot. Each jewel faces every other jewel, and so there is a continuous process of reflection. Pick up one knot, and you pick up the whole net. Place a mark on the face of one jewel, and it will be seen in all the rest. Buddhism too places the interconnectedness of the universe at the heart of its teaching. The Buddha established the fact that all phenomena are conditioned and conditioning, and that for every effect there is always a preceding cause. Nothing, therefore, stands separate as a self-existing entity, but exists in relationship to everything else. Putting forward this truth as simply as he could, the Buddha stated, "This being, that comes to be. With the arising of this, that arises. When this is not, that does not come to be. With the ceasing of this, that ceases." The Buddha also used the analogy of a net to explain how, through ignorance, beings cling to views and speculate about the nature of existence. In the Pramajala Sutta, he lists 62 such views, including whether the universe is infinite or not, whether there is life after death or not, and so on. All these views are held on the ignorant assumption that the universe consists of separate, self-existing entities. The Buddha pointed out that where there is separation, there is division. And where there is division, there is isolation, opposition, conflict, and inevitable suffering. To illustrate, consider two men standing in a fog so heavy they can't even see their own feet. One man believes that they are standing in a field, the other that they are standing in a car park. They debate the issue. They become passionate. Clinging to their beliefs, they engage in justification of their own view and debunk the view of the other. They begin to abuse one another and eventually trade blows. Then, as if by magic, the fog lifts, and suddenly they become aware of the true nature of the place they stand. All conflict evaporates as swiftly as the fog. The debate as to whether they are in a field or not, or whether they are in a car park or not, is rendered utterly pointless. Before, they had belief but did not know. Now they know, and therefore no longer need any kind of view. So it is, the Buddha said, that all unenlightened beings hold the view that life consists of separate, discrete, and permanent entities, including our own self. Because of this, we actively ignore the fact of interdependence, and consequently suffer division and isolation. We feel dissatisfied with life because it behaves in ways we do not like or understand, and crave for it to be different. So we find ourselves entirely caught up in this supreme net of views. The object of practicing the Buddha's teaching is to learn to let go of this net, to go beyond it, to transcend it by dispelling that fog of ignorance. To do that, we need to deliberately turn our attention towards actual experience, with a view to understanding exactly how interdependence works. Once the Buddha remarked that to account for any one thing in existence required us to take into account the whole universe. To illustrate, you hear the sound of a car roaring down the road outside. The driver, it seems, was on his way to hospital to witness the birth of his first child. The birth couldn't have occurred had the driver not met his wife-to-be on a canoeing holiday in North Wales 5 years ago. That meeting could never have taken place had the man not seen an advert for adventure holidays in a magazine. He had picked up the magazine in a dental surgery while he waited for his 6-month checkup. Ridiculous as it might seem, the fact of tooth decay was a necessary condition for you hearing the sound of the car roaring down the road outside. So even with a modicum of investigation, we can begin to see that interdependence is an everyday fact. But the story of the psychic Pat Price seems to suggest interconnectedness at a more subtle mental level. When discussing such matters, Alan often refers to what he calls an ocean of mind, which bears great resemblance to the quantum theorist's idea of an ocean of subatomic vibrations. Is there anything in daily life that we might use as evidence to support this idea? Well, have you ever had the feeling you're being looked at from behind? You've turned round and been proved correct, even though the other person is some distance away. Has it ever happened that you bump into someone you know in town and your good mood inexplicably turns into extreme irritation? Yet as soon as you part company, back comes the good mood. Or have you ever thought of someone one moment and then the phone ring the next and it be the self-same person? Such connections don't just occur between humans either. Video studies have been carried out that seem to prove that some dogs know exactly the moment their owners have decided to come back from work. And some gardeners swear by the positive results to be gained by talking to their plants. If these events do illustrate interconnection, how might it work? Another example. Consider what happens when you strike a tuning fork. And while it's ringing, you bring another tuning fork near it. The two forks never actually touch, but the second fork begins to resonate with the vibrations created by the first. Take the original fork away, and the second will continue to ring independently. Bring the first fork back again, and it will ring again. The implication is that if the universe really is one big bowl of vibrating cosmic soup, then we are all very much connected. Our mental actions are sure to create waves that will be picked up by others. This is also in keeping with quantum theory, where they talk about the zero-point field being a kind of information exchange. This means, of course, that the ethical nature of our thoughts, as well as our words and deeds, carries weight. Whether we act selfishly and cruelly, or with thoughtfulness and compassion, those actions are sure to set off a chain reaction throughout existence. The law of karma states that we cannot escape experiencing the results of our actions. It's like dropping a stone in a pond. Given time, the waves we create come back to us. If we choose to act efficiently, those waves are bound to be pleasant. The Buddha therefore explained, as part of his teaching, the value of, amongst other things, keeping the precepts, generosity, service, truthfulness, compassion and loving kindness. Performing efficient actions such as these ensures a happy, harmonious future, both for us and the world around us. So far, we have at least established the possibility that nothing in life is separate, and seen how following the Buddha's advice can help us make the most of life. However, this understanding remains firmly in the realms of reason and intellect. We still actually view the world in terms of separate, isolated, and permanent entities, and according to the Buddha, with such views, suffering is inevitable. To overcome suffering and transcend the supreme net, we need to do what the quantum physicist does. We need to examine reality at its elementary level, to actually see for ourselves what the universe is made of and how it works. To help us when we look at this elementary level, the Buddha created different methods of analysis. For instance, we can break down experience in terms of the five aggregates, the 12 sense bases, or the 18 elements. Tonight, I would like to examine briefly the method found in the Abhidhamma, the higher teaching of Buddhism. Here we find reality is divided into four categories: three conditioned and conditioning realities, consciousness, mental factors, and matter, and one unconditioned element, Nibbana. The Abhidhamma goes into exhaustive detail concerning each category. For instance, consciousness is divided into 89 unique classes. 52 mental factors are enumerated, and matter is broken down into 28 distinct types. However, for most, such a detailed knowledge is not strictly necessary, although learning the lists is very useful. What is important is to understand that these ultimate realities are simply a reflection of our own personal experience. We all know what consciousness is. It's seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, and awareness of mind. What the teaching calls mental factors are aspects of mind that perform unique tasks within consciousness. Now, that might sound a little daunting, but in reality, all of us are familiar with feeling, attention, determination, intention, envy, lust, faith, and investigation. Matter is also straightforward. We all experience visual objects, sounds, tastes, touches, and smells, and we do so via the eye, ear, tongue, body, and nose. The fourth ultimate reality is Nibbana. Okay, except we're not quite so familiar with that one. But it is important to remember that as an ultimate reality, Nibbana is present in each moment of experience. It's just that we ignore it. To practice insight meditation is essentially to enter into our own science lab. What we do is analyze all occasions of consciousness, mental factors, and matter, and observe their nature in ever greater detail. As insight progresses, we see that these ultimates don't last, not even for a moment. We see that, despite our best efforts, we cannot control them. We see that their transient and uncontrollable nature makes them unreliable and untrustworthy. Importantly, we also see that they arise in dependence upon one another and cannot exist in isolation. Interestingly, as the practice becomes more refined, the behavior of these ultimates begins to strike an uncanny resemblance to processes described in quantum physics. For example, quantum theory states that subatomic particles cannot really be said to exist in any one form. Rather, they exist as the potential to be something. It is only when attention is brought to bear upon the flux, that it settles down into a recognizable shape or pattern. The meditator actually sees for himself directly that the ultimates arise and pass away in a flux. They only appear to become an entity or shape because of a process of mind. One of the mind's functions is to synthesize a succession of ultimates and fuse them together into the perception of a recognizable object. Excuse me. To illustrate, consider a whirling firebrand that we perceive as a circle of light. What we understand to be an object, like the circle of light, is actually nothing but a series of fleeting and insubstantial occasions of consciousness, mental factors, and matter. Again, ultimates behave like quantum particles in that they have no existence in isolation, but only in relationship to one another. Seeing takes place dependent upon the existence of a visible object, a working eye, and attention. Without these, the seeing experience does not occur. Without seeing, there could be no experience of a visible object. Insight shows us that these three ultimate realities are therefore conditioned and conditioning, and that they alone comprise the building blocks of the entire universe of experience. Insight also shows us that there is no division anywhere in all of this. What we think of as reality, the conventional world of separate people, entities, and things, has no intrinsic validity. These things are, at best, illusions constructed by mind. In trying to convey this deep insight, the Toltec shaman, Don Juan, once said, "The world of objects and solidity is a way of making our passage on Earth convenient. It is only a description that was created to help us. We, or rather our reason, forgot that the description is only a description, and thus we entrap the totality of ourselves in a vicious circle from which we rarely emerge in our lifetime." If all this seems about as clear as mud, consider for a moment the nature of an ocean wave. Does the wave have a unique, independent existence apart from the ocean? Of course not. The wave is the ocean, not something separate from it. True, it does temporarily appear in a unique form, but that form is actually an abstraction, a description. In reality, there is only a constant flux. The ocean water is in constant movement due to the forces acting upon it. Further, if it is a real and separate entity, when it reaches the shoreline, does the wave therefore die? If so, can we speculate as to whether it is reborn somewhere else or not? Is the wave eternal, or is it annihilated? Surely these questions are a nonsense, for in reality, we know that a wave doesn't die. It was only a particular form that the ocean took due to prevailing conditions. We cannot even say that the wave was returned to the ocean because, in truth, it never was anything else but the ocean. The beautiful thing about an ocean is we can stand on the shore and observe clearly the way it works. The problem we have with observing the nature of reality is that we are utterly immersed in it. We're addicted to it, sunk in it. We think it's everything, and therefore we can't see clearly. If we could only extricate ourselves from it and reach a point of detachment, then surely the truth would reveal itself. Well, follow the course of insight practice far enough, and we will. When insight into the three marks of transience, unreliability and conditionality reach full maturity, the mind is said to finally let go of its obsession with the conditioned universe. Instead, it alights on what had always been there, but was always ignored. It finds the cool detachment and utter serenity of Nibbana, and from that haven is able to look out across the ocean of existence. So if Nibbana is so close to us, what exactly is it? Nibbana is the unconditioned reality, and as such, neither arises nor perishes. It is permanent, and therefore reliable and happy. This is in direct contrast to the conditioned universe, which is in a perpetual state of arising and passing away, and is extremely unreliable. Neither arising nor perishing, Nibbana is therefore timeless and measureless, and therefore infinite and eternal. It bears no relationship to the conditioned universe because it is beyond it. Once Nibbana is found, it is said that the fog of ignorance is instantly dispelled, and the entire teaching magically reveals itself. We come to understand that there are three levels of truth: Nibbana, the unconditioned reality, the ultimate reality of mind and matter, and the conventional reality of entities, beings, and things. Each truth is fine at its own level, and life still operates normally. It's just that we are no longer confused about what's what. With enlightenment, it is said that all speculations about the world cease. We transcend that supreme net of which the Buddha spoke. All arguments about whether there is a self or not, or whether the universe is eternal or not, simply no longer apply. Just as, when standing on the seashore, there is absolutely no confusion as to where the wave goes when it dies. When you know you are the universe, there is no longer a need for concern about your place in it. Gone forever is the terrible self-view that propagates such states as fear of dying, loneliness, obsession, envy, pride, and longing. Instead, there is a pure spontaneity, openness to life, and a simple delight in the fact of just being. Everything that we have understood life to consist of is seen to be the play of the ultimates. This vast ocean of consciousness, mental factors, and matter weaves together endless patterns and shapes. It's all a quite marvelous illusion, a cosmic dance. To quote Alan, ultimately, the only true happiness and satisfaction are when craving and hatred have ceased, when we have fully understood that there is nothing worth distorting our universe for, we simply let the universe, of which we are an inseparable part, flow in and through us as it will. Our personal desires then become as nothing, and we simply move with the vast breath of life, doing whatever needs to be done, quite beyond any thought of self or non-self. That is what it means to be truly awake. Understanding the interdependent nature of reality conditions a natural love and compassion for all beings. Many people wish to assist their fellow man to help them overcome their trials and tribulations. Such actions are very good and beneficial, and are productive of happiness and well-being for the doer also. But really, the greatest we can do is to strive for enlightenment ourselves. Imagine the effect on this vast ocean of mind, were we to truly understand the nature of this supreme net, and in transcending it, destroy all craving, hatred, and delusion forever. To follow the Buddha's teaching to the very end is to finally wake up to the fact that you are the universe, that you always were the universe, and you always will. Thank you.